Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio this 20th day of March, 2024. There's going to be a lot about JFK today because there's a new book by David W. Mantic, MD, PhD, and Jerry Corsi, PhD. The JFK Assassination, a Final Analysis, just out. It was published on the 8th of March, and by the 15th, it had already sold 4,000 copies. I can't begin to tell you how impressive that is. Just for contrast, the average academic book, you know, by a professor might sell around 750 over a decade. 750 over a decade. My book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, where I brought together 13 experts, including six PhDs, where we sorted out what had happened, discovered the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students there, and that had been a FEMA drill, presented as mass murder to promote gun control. It sold nearly 500 copies in less than a month when it was banned. Went on sale 22 October 2015, banned 19 November 2015. Too much truth. They couldn't let it out. I released it for free as a PDF. And I've been told it's been downloaded millions of times as a PDF, which is why they had to bring a lawsuit against me. Completely fabricated and contrived. Find a way to block the release of that book by so many different sources. Now, what I'm telling you is 500 copies in less than a month, man, it was destined to become a bestseller. That's what they did not want. David Mantic's book, 4,000 in a week? Absolutely stunning. So I'm going to review a few of the, you know, latest news developments. But most of what I'm going to talk about is this new book. Now, it just so happens I published an overview about the Kennedy assassination on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. New book, Nails, How JFK Was Taken Out in Dallas. You can also find, and I'm very pleased, UNZ Review, UNZ.com. There's the link. Here's the link, unz.com/article/new book Nails How JFK Was Taken Out in Dallas / It's got 9 or 10 comments now. I'm gonna go through the whole shebang. Before we get there, however, let me begin some of the latest news stories. For years, Yahoo propped up Hamas. Now it's blown up in our faces. Premier's policy of treating the terror group as a partner at the expense of a boss in Palestinian statehood has resulted in wounds that will take years, Israel years, to heal from. No, it's never going to heal. This is permanent. Slaughtering Palestinians openly, viciously, sadistically, starving them to death. You don't get over that ever, ever. Here's the story. And let's see, this is from Times of Israel. So it's putting a very positive face on the situation. For years, the various governments led by Benjamin Netanyahu took an approach that divided power between the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, bringing Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas to his knees while making moves that propped up the Hamas terror group. The idea was to prevent Abbas or anyone else in the Palestinian Authority's West Bank government from advancing toward the establishment of a Palestinian state. Thus, amid this bid to impair Hamas was upgraded from a mere terror group to an organization with which Israel held indirect negotiation via Egypt, and one that was allowed to receive infusion of cash from abroad. Hamas was also included in discussions about increasing the number of work permits Israel's granted to Gazan laborers, which kept money flowing into Gaza, meaning food for families and the ability to purchase basic products. Israeli officials said these permits, which allow Gazan laborers to earn higher salaries than they would in the enclave, were a powerful tool to help preserve calm. Well, we know where that's all turned out, but Bibi has been manipulating behind the scene 100%. 100%. What else do we have going on here? Trump's lawyers say securing bond for massive New York civil business fraud judgment is a practical impossibility. Is anyone surprised? The lawyers representing former President Donald Trump said on Monday that their client has been unsuccessful in his attempt to secure bond for Judge Arthur Argonaut's $464 million civil business fraud judgment against him and his company. Trump's team submitted a filing in the York appellate court saying that despite Trump's efforts, surators wouldn't accept real estate as collateral. The Trump organization must come up with around $1 billion in cash to continue to operate. The Wall Street Journal reported the lawyers argued in their filing that posting bond for the judgment full support is a practical impossibility. Here, defendants' ongoing diligent efforts have proven that a bond in the judgment full amount is a practical impossibility, they wrote. These diligent efforts have included approaching about 30 surety companies through four separate brokers. A bond requirement of this enormous magnitude, effectively requiring cash reserves approaching $1 billion, is unprecedented for a private company, the legal filing added. David Gelman, a criminal defense attorney and former deputy district attorney, told Fox, Trump should have more freedom to satisfy the bond, because not even the richest man in the world has $464 million lying around. Courts really don't deny bonds when there are other ways to pay, Gelman said again, because this is so unprecedented. And I don't care how rich you are, nobody has that much liquid cash. So if a court had the option to allow a defendant to use some other collateral to satisfy the bond, they will, or they would, if this were a normal case. But it's lawfare. They're using the law as a political weapon against Donald Trump. We have seen this again and again and again. Thus, it appears Trump property to be seized Monday over victimless non-crime. Here's Newsday reporting the upcoming deadline. Judge Arthur Engoron, who's a very weird guy, by the way, ruled in the state favor on many of the main points even before the trial began last year. In February, after a 2.5-month trial, Engoron ordered Trump to pay $355 million plus interest. The frauds found here leap off the page and shock the conscience. That's just bullshit. That's just ridiculous. This whole thing was a fabricated case. Trump goes to banks using property as collateral, estimates the value of Mar-a-Lago, $200 million, $250 million more. The judge, the banks, don't just take the applicant's word for it. They have their own experts. The value of real estate is highly objective. I mean, you know, you got properties adjacent, what their value and all that. You have lots of experts. It's true. Subjectively, one could make up any value, and that's what the judge did. He said the value, I don't know, was 18 or 30 million, vastly below. Now, so what? The judge had that opinion. He's not an expert, not only that, but he's biased. This whole thing is a fraudulent case against Trump. The banks, in any case, have their own experts. They go about doing their own evaluations. This is all standard practice. They don't simply take Trump's word for it. And they went ahead, they made the loans, they were paid back with interest, they're fat and happy, they want to do more business with Trump. Enter the Democrat Attorney General Letitia James and his corrupt judge, Arthur Engoron. And I say that because what has happened here is a grotesque abuse of the law, a grotesque abuse of the law. Indeed, other experts will testify. Mar-a-Lago is worth $200 to $300 million. I mean, look at the property. It's right on beachfront. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's magnificent. It's one of the most plush, elegant estates in all of Florida, which has a lot of very valuable property. The article continues, Trump denies any attempt to deceive banks or anyone else about his wealth. He said the judge's assistant in the lawsuits were politically motivated attempts to keep him from reclaiming the White House in the 2024 presidential election. Absolutely right. He also argued it's unfair to make himself assets or spend a huge amount buying a bond when the case is still being appealed. That is a key point. I did nothing wrong. Trump said on his social media platform Tuesday, the corrupt political hacks in New York judge and AG are asking me to put up massive amounts of money before I'm allowed to appeal the ridiculous decision, never done before, no jury, no victim, full disclaimer, cause happy banks, election interference, witch hunt. Absolutely right. This move by the state is essentially telling the world that investment money is no longer safe in New York. Numerous experts in investment have drawn that conclusion. They advise against investing in New York. What's going to be the cumulative effect of this? We've all got the rich in New York moving out of New York because crime is increasing, shops are closing, it's becoming less and less safe. Witness the violence on the subway. The government even has to send the National Guard in to protect civilians. So when you have exclusive shops closing, when you have the wealthiest residents in New York City moving, that's dramatically reducing the tax base, the revenue coming into the city to deal with the problems it has, such as crime in the street and the massive numbers of migrants. In other words, we're into a death spiral. And with an absurd judgment like this, investors aren't going to go to New York. New York's going to lose its center as a financial capital of the world. Absolutely stunning stuff. Letitia James has been out for a scalp. She wants to take Trump Tower, for example, seize it, and fill it with migrants. I'll bet you anything that's what's going to happen. What an insult. And can you imagine the damage those migrants are going to do to Trump Tower? I mean, our country, frankly, has spun out of control, and it's all because of one party desperate to stay in power. Meanwhile, on the positive side, Trump gets support from a billionaire backer. Nelson Peltz, P-E-L-T-Z, a billionaire investor, says he will once again back the 45th president in his reelection bid. Peltz backed Trump in 2020, later claimed he regretted his decision to support the former president. The billionaire cited Biden's deteriorating mental condition as a primary reason he's throwing his support behind former President Trump. Un momento. Jerry? Yes. Yes. That's right. Perfect, Jerry. You got it. That was Jerry Corsi, the co-author with David of his new book, whom I plan to interview today, starting at the bottom of the hour. But we got a time zone confusion. Jerry's actually in the Eastern, and he misread the times I was giving for Pacific. I mean, I had designated which time zone, but it got lost in the translation. So he'll be joining next Wednesday instead of today. He was just confirming our arrangements and for a separate interview with David Manning. In any case, the billionaire cited Biden's deteriorating mental condition as a primary reason he's throwing his support behind former President Trump in the 2024 race. He's just saying what we're all thinking. Yet he has received a considerable amount of hate from the left for his position. Financial Times interviewed Peltz and provided this synopsis. Billionaire investor Nelson Peltz plans to vote for Donald Trump, saying his assessment that President Joe Biden's mental condition is really scary outweighed his concern over the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Well, that was bullshit. That was just bullshit. January 6 was all fabricated. Congress is even contemplating bringing criminal charges against Liz Cheney and Adam Schiff and others. They destroyed the evidence right when they were ordered to preserve it. Why would anyone have any respect for the Financial Times writing a bullshit piece like that? The Epic Times presented this statement from Peltz. We can't go on letting everyone into this country. We have an immigration problem. It's not a Republican or Democrat problem, said Mr. Peltz. Expressed opposition to stopping immigration altogether. But I want some boundaries put on so we at least know who we're bringing in. Good, good, good. I mean, that's a very modest position, in my opinion. You want to hear something that simply floors me? Ketanji Brown Jackson. This is the latest member of the Supreme Court. If you have any doubts about whether or not she's a dim bulb, this is going to floor you. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said Monday she was concerned that the First Amendment was hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. Doesn't she understand that's what these amendments are for, to constrain the government? God! Here's a story about
Mrs. Jackson.
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. I mean, what would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
And Your Honor, I understand that instinct, and I guess what I tell you is our position is not that the government can't interact with the platforms there. They can and they should in certain circumstances like that that present such dangerous issues for society and especially young people. But the way they do that has to be in compliance with the First Amendment. And I think that means they can give them all the true information that the platform needs and ask to amplify that.
Right, but you're just saying that. I guess I thought when you say the way they do that is consistent with the First Amendment, is that they have to show that they have a compelling interest to do what they're doing. In other words, you want us to take the line to be between compulsion and encouragement. And what we're looking at is the government can't compel, maybe they can encourage. I'm wondering whether that's not really the line. The line is, does the government, pursuant to the First Amendment, have a compelling interest in doing things that result in restricting the speech in this way? That test, I think, takes into account all of these different circumstances, that we don't really care as much about how much the government is compelling, or maybe we do, but in the context of tailoring and not as sort of a freestanding inquiry that's overlaid on all of this. Does that make sense?
It does, Your Honor, and I apologize for missing your guidance earlier. So the way I think about that is I've been discussing the standard, and I thought we've all been discussing the standard on the front end of the analysis, which is there a First Amendment violation? Is there an infringement of speech? I guess I would conceptually think of strict scrutiny, narrow tailoring, compelling interest as coming in at the back end to say, yes, maybe in the ordinary case, the government shouldn't have been permitted to undertake the kind of suppression of free speech that it did. But in this unique circumstance, it actually had a compelling interest, and it used narrowly tailored means to accomplish that interest. I mean, I think that's the fail-safe. If you're concerned with the breadth of our arguments, that's one fail-safe, which is no matter how broad the standard the court adopts, there's always going to be strict scrutiny at the end of the line to save the government in times where it desperately needs to do the things that you're outlining.
Thank you.
I don't think the government should have the right to censor anybody. How the hell are we going to find out what's the truth and what's not the truth? Brown is just assuming that the government knows the truth. Well, the government may know the truth but not care about the truth. The government may be promoting falsehoods and lies. The government promoted an official account of the assassination of JFK that's ridiculous. The government has an absolute indefensible account of 9/11. It's ridiculous. The government claims that Sandy Hook was legit. Ridiculous. The government seems to be all for mass immigration, which is just a massive threat to the United States. And they would constrain Americans from speaking out in criticism of the government? I'm just floored. I'm just floored. Not only does this woman appear to be out of her depth on the Supreme Court, it's just awful. We got a guy I used to think was super smart, named Ian Olbermann, who's suggesting there's hope for Trump's assassination on social media. How bad is that? Former MSNBC bomb thrower Keith Olbermann is taking heat for posting to social media his apparent hope that Donald Trump would be assassinated. The shrill extreme leftist jumped to his X account Saturday, replied to a Joe Biden campaign post featuring a video of a segment of a speech Trump recently made in Dayton, Ohio. The Biden-Harris headquarters post of the video was captioned, "Trump says he has been treated worse than Abraham Lincoln, who was assassinated." To that, Olbermann responded, "There's always hope. There's always the hope." And here's the link to the tweet. Here we have it. Let me see what I've got.
So you would think that would cause a problem, right? So you could understand it. But nobody comes close to Trump. And now even you've heard of Andrew Jackson. He was actually a great general and a very good president. They say that he was persecuted as president more than anybody else. Second was Abraham Lincoln. This is just what they said. This is in the history books. They were brutal. Andrew Jackson's wife actually died over it, they say. Died of a broken heart, but she died over it. He was never quite the same. But they say Andrew Jackson, they say Abraham Lincoln was second, but he had in all fairness, he did have a civil war. So you would think that would cause a problem, right? So you could understand it. But nobody comes close to Trump. And now even you've heard of Andrew Jackson. He was actually a great general and a very good president. They say that he was persecuted as president more than anybody else. Second was Abraham Lincoln. This is just what they said. This is in the history books. They were brutal. Andrew Jackson's wife actually died over it, they say. Died of a broken heart, but she died over it. He was never quite the same. But they say Andrew Jackson, they say Abraham Lincoln was second, but he had in all fairness, he did have a civil war. So you would think that would cause a problem, right? So you could understand it. But nobody comes close to Trump. And now even you've heard.
Yep. The left-wing screen was immediately blasted by replies to his post calling for the assassination of someone with whom he has a political disagreement. Doug Ross, seek help. Gunther Eagleman, cry more Trump 2024. Spitfire, at the very least, this is a TOS, Terms of Service violation. Perhaps Secret Service should pay Keith a visit. We all know Keith is mentally unstable. We'll be right back.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's Jim Fetzer, your host, where I said I wanted to talk about the new book. Jerry Corsi called me about it. New book, Nails, How JFK Was Taken Out in Dallas. Starting to build up some traction. 13 comments so far, with new replies. This is on UNZ.com. I expect there are going to be hundreds of comments before this is over. What I want to do is go through each paragraph and talk about it, and I'll be glad to take your calls. I'll probably open the lines early. Here we go. I mean, the visuals, though, I mean, I've loaded this with a lot of visuals. You can also find it on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. Okay, it's all there. A new book by David W. Manning, MD, PhD, and Jerome Corsi, PhD. The Assassination of JFK, The Final Analysis, 2024, was published on 8th March 2024 and had sold 4,000 copies by 15 March, the Ides of March, which reflects the public's thirst for truth about the death of our 35th president. David and I began collaborating in 1992 in the wake of Oliver Stone's magisterial film JFK, which presents the most accurate, complete, and detailed account of what actually happened in Dealey Plaza on 22 November 1963, ever offered to the American people through the mass media. But now we know more. I mean, David's the leading expert on the medical evidence. What he has done is refine and complete his analysis of the medical evidence, which has to be basic to understand the assassination. In other words, in the past, the body of a decedent is regarded as the best evidence. But in this case, you have a body that was subjected to a lot of alteration after it left Parkland. Once it got to Bethesda, all kinds of bad stuff happened. A small, clean puncture wound to the throat, for example, was exaggerated, made open to look like it were an exit wound instead of an entry. The surgeon took a cranial saw to the skull of JFK and greatly enlarged the fistite blood at the back of the head to extend the whole top of his head. It's described in mathematical detail in the Bethesda autopsy report. David Lifton, by the way, was the first to call out about the body, in this case, not being the best evidence, in his book, Best Evidence, 1980, actually had his, well, he had his girlfriend write to Edgar about the frames of the Zapruder film being published in the wrong sequence, which he remarkably enough replied and affirmed. But David read a description of the injuries as described in the Bethesda autopsy report to an expert physician and asked him what it sounded like without identifying the body. And he said it sounded like he'd been hit in the head with an axe. Well, they were trying to change the obvious evidence of a shot fired from in front, which entered the right temple and blew his brains out the back of his head. His fist-sized gaping hole. to make the head look more like something that could have happened if Jack had been leaning forward and been shot in the head from behind, right? Taking off the top of his head. That was the idea. You can actually see it in the diagrams. They had a Navy artist who wasn't allowed to actually see the body. They told him what to draw. He drew what they told him to draw, but it was a fantasy scenario. So the reason this has been so complicated is that the body was itself physically altered. The x-rays and the autopsy photographs were themselves changed. I mean, the case had been a medical mess. No one has done more to clear it up than David W. Mantic. He's both an MD from Michigan, a PhD from Wisconsin, in physics, by the way, and board certified in radiation oncology, which is the treatment of cancer using x-ray therapy. He's actually been in the forefront of developing a variation of proton therapy. So David went to the knock. Well, you'll hear as I explain. Went to the archives for the first time in late 1992 and began making fabulous discoveries one after another. Okay, that's the first paragraph. Having published three collections of expert studies on JFK with David Mantic, Assassination Science, 1998, Murder in Dealey Plaza, 2000, for which he suggested the title, and The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, 2003, I would like to explain the dozen-shot, five-hit account of what happened that day in that place, while recommending everyone should follow the lead and obtain this book, which presents the most authoritative analysis of what actually happened based upon the research of the leading expert on the medical evidence regarding JFK in the world today. And I've given you reasons why that's the thing to do. In these books, you see, I carried over the research style I had employed repeatedly in philosophy by bringing together groups of experts into edited volumes. This collaborative effort regarding conspiracy research had not been adopted in the past. So I was setting an example. If you want to read about it, download my article, Reasoning About Assassinations, which I presented at an international conference at Cambridge, which was published in an international peer-reviewed journal, where I explain the whole idea behind collaborative research, have experts, in essence, evaluating one another's work to reduce the probability of mistakes. And I think that's why these books have been so successful. I mean, I think in Assassination Science, I had 17 experts, Murder in Dealey Plaza, a dozen, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, six. Because we get into more specialized areas, there are fewer experts. But the six, my goodness, David Lifton, Jack White, John P. Costella, David Mantic, David Healy, myself. I mean, this is all sensational stuff. And those three books just blew apart the cover up. They just blew apart the cover up. And once you get rid of all the phony evidence, all the pieces fall into place. For example, David discovered the autopsy x-rays had been altered to conceal that fifth side blowout to the back of the head. I'll say more about this. And that all of the x-rays are non-originals. Not a single x-ray in the National Archive of JFK is an original. Well, ask yourself, could the Mafia, for example, have extended its reach into Bethesda Naval Hospital to alter x-rays under the control of officers, medical officers of the United States Navy or the Secret Service? No! No! Well, then the Mafia can't have been responsible for the cover-up of some power far higher. we discover the Zapruder film has been extensively edited and revised. They took original material, they revised it. But anti-Castro Cubans, for example, have obtained the Zapruder film to subject anyone else. No, it was actually done in a secret lab. David Lifton nailed this originally. A secret lab in Rochester adjacent to Kodak headquarters known as Hawkeye Works. CIA did it. Altering the film. How about this? I don't talk about this variation, but they substituted someone else's brain for the brain of JFK. So in Assassination Signs, I have the report of a world authority on the human brain. How can you do better than this? A world authority on the human brain who's also an expert in wound ballistics, having supervised an emergency medical hospital during the Battle of Okinawa for injured Okinawans and Japanese prisoner of war, Bob Livingston, concluded that the brain seen in diagrams and photographs with a completely intact cerebellum, for example, and very minimal damage at the top of the head cannot possibly be that of JFK, because we had physician after physician at Parkland reporting cerebellar tissue extruding through the blowout to the back of the head. Not only that, but Bob goes on to explain there's a very tough membrane called the tentorium that separates the cerebellum from the cerebral tissue, ordinary gray tissue. And then unless that very tough membrane had been severed, it would have been impossible for cerebellum to be extruding from the wound. And yet we have one after another, after another, after another, after another, reporting that extruding cerebellum. Well, great stuff. Continuing. So, could the KGB have done that? Could the KGB have substituted someone else's brain for that of JFK? Of course not. So when you get this cover up, you start excluding candidates. Not that they couldn't have had a participation in the actual assassination. They cannot have had a role in the cover-up. And when you look at who's going to cover up, you know, the death of the 35th president of the United States, you realize that has to go pretty high up on the food chain. Okay, continuing. Two shots from the front. Everyone knows the official narrative of three shots fired from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository by the lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald. What most do not know is that the FBI and Secret Service had concluded that evening that JFK had been hit three times, once in the back, 5.5 inches below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column, a shallow shot. It only went as far as the second knuckle on your little finger. That Texas Governor John Conley had been hit by a shot to the back, and JFK by a second shot that hit the back of his head, killing him. Okay, that's what they concluded the evening of the assassination. But get this. During the afternoon and evening of the day of the assassination, however, two shots were widely reported over radio and television alike. A shot to the throat, described as a small, clean wound of entry three times by Malcolm Perry, M.D., during the Parkland press conference held following the announcement of his death by Malcolm Kilduff, acting press secretary. Kilduff had pointed to his right temple and explained it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head, a finding widely reported and attributed to Admiral George Berkeley, the president's personal physician. Ooh, you're kidding me. What do you mean? The day of the assassination, they were reporting two shots, a shot to the throat and a shot to the right temple. You even have Malcolm Kilduff pointing to his right temple, saying it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head. But those do not appear in the conclusion of three shots fired from above and behind. Give me a break. when you combine the shot to the throat and the shot to the right temple with the hit in JFK's back into the back of his head, you arrive at a four-hit scenario, which is a very close approximation to the final analysis Manick provides in his latest book. The Warren Commission bamboozled the public by falsely asserting there had been only three shots, all of which were fired from above and behind. The shots widely reported on radio and TV to the throat and right temple had to be suppressed, since their existence contradicted the official three-shot lone gunman narrative. Do you think the government was unaware that the major networks were all reporting these two shots, the entry shot to the throat and the shot to the right temple, on radio and television that day? Cover-up commences. Obviously, shots from more than one direction would imply more than one gunman, and therefore that JFK had been killed by a conspiracy. But the facts were elementary. If you put together the two hits agreed upon by the Secret Service and the FBI, which were supposed to have been fired from the 6-4 of the Texas School Book Depository, but were actually fired from the top of the county records building, in the case of the shot to the back, and from the second floor of the Dow Tax building, in the case of the shot to the EOP, that's the external occipital protuberance at the back of the head, where you dress your head if you were reclining in a bathtub, with a shot to the throat, fired from inside the triple underpass into the right temple, from an above sewer opening at the intersection of the triple underpass in the picket fence. There were inescapable before. The word ground is missing. Above ground sewer opening at the intersection of the triple underpass and the big event, there were inescapably four. And look how different. That implies already four assassins, four shooters. Four distinct wounds fired from different directions, different locations, two from the front, two from the back, none from the 6th floor of the Texas School Book Depository. But instead, the mainstream media, led by the New York Times, went into cover-up mode and promoted the lone gunman theory, claiming three and only three shots had been fired from the 6th floor of the book depository, even though the reports of those two shots to the throat and to the right temple have been extensive, detailed, and compelling. The vast majority of Americans had listened to or watched these reports. Yet now, they were being told there had been only three shots, all of which had come from above and behind. Can there be any doubt that many felt that something was wrong? Whether or not they could put their finger on exactly why? Let me tell you, you watch NBC, see it now today, I give you a link. It's right there in the article. Watch it. You'll be blown away. And you say late in the evening, when these reports of the FBI and the Secret Service having concluded there were three and only three shots from above and behind begin to trickle in, Frank McGee, who is nobody's fool, says on air, "This is incongruous. How can the man have been shot from in front, from behind?" I mean, here they were on NBC reporting two shots from in front, the shot to the throat, the shot to the right temple, and yet behind the Secret Service are saying all the shots came from behind. How can the man have been shot from the front, from behind? We're not supposed to notice. Most were willing to hold their concerns in suspense and give the government all that time it needed to conduct a complete investigation of what many regarded as the crime of the century. Little did they know that the government was busy concealing basic facts about how JFK had been taken out, especially those shots from in front. and that their designated patsy could not have done it. Indeed. The CIA would soon adopt a massive cyber characterizing citizens who could add 2 plus 2 and conclude JFK had been hit at least 4 times as conspiracy theorists, which would become standard operating procedure moving forward. Yeah, absolutely. If you can add 2 plus 2, you're a conspiracy theorist. This is so insulting. Meanwhile, Oswald was in the doorway. Lee was actually standing on the upper steps of the depository, watching the JFK motorcade passing by. The Warren Report of 1964 claimed the man in the doorway, called Doorman, was instead his co-worker, Billy Lovelady. But the FBI had interviewed Billy on 29 February 1964, wearing the very same clothing he wore on 22 November 1963, which was a red and white vertically striped short-sleeved shirt, completely different than the closely textured reddish-brown long-sleeve shirt that was worn by Oswald that day. For Larry Rivera's rendered reconstruction of what the doorway looked like at the time. I mean, this is such good stuff. When we were sorting out Oswald in the doorway, I may have published 8 articles about it. I mean, it was really, we spent a huge amount of time on this. Huge. It was so obvious that Billy was not a figure called Doorman, that they obfuscated his face by blacking it out, known as Black Hole Man, the students of these images, and whited out his shirt. No other obvious indication of alteration, where Black Tie Man is both in front of and behind Doorman at the same time, which is an optical impossibility. And by itself, proves a photograph was altered. Some of the best research on this issue has been done by Richard Hook, Ralph Sinkay, and Larry Bravura. You can find Larry's detailed research in his brilliant book, The JFK Horseman, 2018. Richard Hook, now departed this earth, sad to say, did comparisons of Lee Oswald when he was arrested with a man in the doorway. He began by pointing out 5 to 7 similarities. By the time he was done, I think he had 100. Well, there were innumerable similarities because it was one and the same person. Ralph Sinkay was quite good in contributing to. Ralph is a chiropractor. And he pointed out to me how we can know that was Lee in the doorway on the basis of his height, his weight, his build, his shirt, and his T-shirt. He's absolutely right. The man in the doorway had the same height, weight, build, shirt, and T-shirt as Lee Oswald when Lee Oswald was arrested. In fact, the Dallas cops were so aware of the similarity, they had Lee take off his outer shirt, this long-sleeve, richly textured shirt, brownish red in color, so the similarity wouldn't be so apparent to the public. Look at Larry Rivera's reconstruction of the doorway. You got Billy holding his hands up to protect his eyes from the sun, wearing his short sleeve red and white vertically striped shirt, and Lee beside him, slightly higher up, wearing the long sleeve richly textured shirt that bears no resemblance to the shirt at Billy Lovelady was wearing. I mean, the deceit and deception of the government is simply overwhelming and grotesque. Overwhelming and grotesque. They actually even hired Robert Grodin, many of you think of as an icon of JFK research, as a special consultant to investigate the rumors that Lee had been in the doorway. And Robert Grodin took Billy Lovelady and had him put on a I mean, is this so complicated? A red and black checkered shirt, because he wanted to claim it was the same as a man in the foreground who had such a weird countenance, I describe it as a gorilla man. But gorilla man had a pocket in the shirt that the Billy Lovelady shirt did not have. Judith Vere Baker did a brilliant refutation of Robert Groden's report back to the House Select Committee on Assassinations when it reinvestigated in 77, 78 with its final report in 79 that discounted those reports of Oswald in the doorway as false rumors based on Groden's research that he fabricated his data. Judith Vere Baker, who had a romance with Lee in New Orleans the summer before the assassination, did a brilliant job. I published that too. Good stuff. But then Larry carried it further by superimposing the face of Lee Oswald and a Billy Lovelady on the facial features of a doorman. And it turns out if you set the pupils equidistant, and you're taking the photograph in the same perspective, that was the same person. All the features fall into place with Lee. The ears are right. The jaw is right. The nose is right. It's Lee. There's no doubt about it. Billy, no. The ears are wrong. The jaw is wrong. The nose wrong. Not Billy. So my serious objective research has definitively established that Lee Oswald was in the doorway. I got to tell you, it's very interesting what's going to come out here, because I can see now ops are starting to add comments where I'm going to be in the position to refute them, unless of course they got something right. We'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us, fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, get this. David exposed JFK alteration. As board certified in radiation oncology, David was ideally prepared to examine the JFK autopsy x-rays in the National Archive, where just before his entry, he told me that he thought he would find evidence of a second shot to the head, but also that the x-rays had been altered. He found both. Using a technique from physics known as optical densitometry, he discovered that a blowout at the back of the head, back of the cranium, had been covered with material too dense to be authentic. I discovered that in frame 374 of the Abraham Zapruder film, you can see the exposed brains the patch was used to conceal. I mean, it's really fascinating. My reasoning was they spent so much time, blacking out the hole in the back of the head in early frames. After 313, 14, 15, 16, 17, for example, that they might have overlooked that it would be visible in later frames. In 374, I found. There you can see it. You can see the blowout, bluish gray matter. Remember how often brains are referred to as gray matter? And then there's a pinkish, that's a skull flap still attached to the head, this pinkish thing, which was blown out by the third shot to the head, which was a frangible exploding bullet. This stuff is so good. I'm giving a distillation of 30 years of research here, okay, with the best people, because that's what I do. I bring together the best experts on any of these subjects in order to sort out what really happened. Notice the resemblance of area P with exposed brain matter, often called gray matter. The pink extension was a still attached skull flap, 3-inch crescent shaped. This substantiated the bullet trajectory through the head that entered the right temple. At this point, therefore, we had confirmation of a four-hit scenario. But questions remained as to whether or not a shot that had been fired from the curbside sewer opening, as many students had long since concluded, in advance of Oliver Stone's JFK Revisited, which should be released on the 22nd of November 2021, I summarized our state of knowledge of the assassination at the time. The real deal, JFK special, 18 November 2021, dedicated to Oliver Stone. And there I spell out, you know, everything we knew up to that point, which included all but this refinement. Continuing. I knew that David believed there had been another shot to the head, the first to the back of the head, the second to the right temple, but mistakenly inferred it had been from the grass opposite the knoll, where we have two different photos of the same gunman standing behind the lone tree there holding his rifle. It was only with publication of David's new book that I understood his position and lingering pieces of the puzzle fell into place for me. The long-standing dispute about the origin of the headshot from the above-ground sewer opening at the intersection of the TUP and the picket fence, or the curb sewer opening, would be resolved. So a lot of people had said, yeah, the shot had come from the curbside. Others said, no, it was from the intersection of the triple underpass and the picket fence, where there's an above-ground sewer opening. And we'd been there. We'd investigated. Listen to this. The curbside sewer shot. Larry Revere had taken photos of the above-ground sewer opening at the intersection of the TOP and the picket fence, which aligned perfectly with the entry wound in the right temple and a blowout at the back of the head. I'd identify this location as the one from which that shot was taken in my JFK special of 18 November 2021, at least in part. I had discounted the curbside sewer opening because years earlier, David and I had taken a close look where David even climbed inside the sewer itself and concluded that the trajectory was not right for the shot that entered the right temple. I mean, this is really fascinating. David actually climbed down into the sewer to examine the perspective and recognize it wasn't right for the shot that entered the right temple. Using a sophisticated 3D modeling technique on Dealey Plaza, Larry had ascertained the view of the limo as it approached the sewer opening, which impressed me greatly as to the prospect of a headshot having been fired from that location. And indeed, it turns out that David had resolved the differences between those who located a shot to the head from the above-ground sewer location and from the curbside sewer opening because both were right. JFK had been hit a third time in the head from the curbside sewer opening virtually simultaneously with a shot to the right temple from the above ground sewer opening. Yes. This was so subtle. This was so complex. It took David all these many years to sort it out. So JFK had actually been hit five times. First, in the back by a shallow shot that only penetrated about as far as the second knuckle of your little finger. Second, in the throat by a shot that passed through the windshield and route to its target. Third, in the back of the head after the limo was brought to an abrupt halt. Fourth, in the right temple by a shot that blew his brains out the back of his head. And fifth, in the right side of the head by the virtually simultaneous shot from the curbside sewer opening, where their combined force blew out a triangular piece of skull known as the Harper fragment and debris galore. Indeed, Bobby Hargis, who was riding to the right front, was hit by this debris so hard he initially thought he himself had been shot. When the limo was brought to a halt, Hargis parked his bike, ran in between the Secret Service Cadillac and the presidential limo up to the grassy knoll from which he believed shots had been fired. Douglas Jackson, riding on the opposite side, motored up the grassy knoll until his bike fell over and then proceeded on foot. Five agents exited the Secret Service limousine and surrounded the presidential. One took a piece of skull from a little boy and threw it in the back seat. I believe, by the way, that was the Harper fragment. A further development among our newest discoveries is that one of the Secret Service agents actually climbed into the presidential limousine at that point in time. All that had to be removed. They took it out. They removed it. I initially believed that the limo stop had only lasted 6 or 8 seconds. But after inventorying all of the activities that took place, it cannot have been less than 20 seconds. And since the film is supposed to be at 18.3 frames per second, that's like 400 frames. I actually believe it was running at 24. There wasn't an 18.3. That's because they took out so many frames that they reduced the frame rate by removing so many. And the turn from Houston on Dam, which they also eliminated, took out like another 100. So actually, since the extant version is 487 frames, the original was around 1,000. In other words, there are more frames removed from the original Zapruder film than are found in the extant version. Thus, I turn to the limo stop. The occurrence of the limo stop was such a stunning proof of Secret Service complicity that it had to be removed. Thus, while the original 8mm already split film developed in Dallas was taken to the National Photographic Interpretation Center in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, the substitute, a 16mm unsplit film developed at the secret CIA photo lab Hawkeye Works, adjacent to Kodak headquarters in Rochester, New York, was brought there on Sunday, and the substitution of films was affected. David Lifton, Best Evidence 1980, had already sorted this out. But would be Douglas Horn, Inside the ARRB, Volume 4 of 5, 2009, whose work on this exchange is definitive, and John P. Costello, PhD, who proved the exit film to be a sophisticated fabrication. I give you links to their work. I mean, it's such terrific stuff. David and I had both been struck when Newsweek on 22 November 1993 published a diagram locating the limo about 30 feet further west than the X mark on Elm Street, officially designated as the place where he was taken out. But that difference corresponds to the location of the curbside sewer and was probably improperly located for that reason. Indeed, yellow paint had been applied the night before and was still wet, which it turns out was used to define the precise location at which a driver, William Greer, should bring the limo to a halt in case the target was still alive. And that's what happened. He'd been hit in the back. He'd been hit in the throat. But to all appearances, he was still alive. Greer hit some brakes, bringing him to a abrupt halt. They're jostled forward. And I, by the way, have input from a half a dozen people who have seen what they refer to as the other film. Without claiming it to be the unedited original, it appears to be the unedited original. Six of them, some of whom have seen it on multiple occasions, as many as three times. And they all confirmed the abrupt limo stop and that all the passengers were jostled forward to make sure Jack would be killed. And then these three shots to the head all occurred after the limousine had been brought to a halt. These photos capture what would have been the view of the shooter inside the curbside sewer when the limo is brought to a halt. And this accounts for the location of the eighth assassin who fired that day at JFK in an elaborate conspiracy to remove the 35th president of the United States and replace him with Lyndon Johnson, whom I and others, including Phil Nelson and Roger Stone, have identified as the mastermind behind the assassination of JFK. David has thus finally completed the task of accounting for the medical evidence in the death of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, for which he richly deserves our gratitude. And of course, my signature. Jim Fetzer, PhD, is a former Marine Corps officer and retired professor of philosophy, who has become deeply engaged in exposing crimes committed by the American government against its own citizens. I want to talk about some of the comments. The first, by Thomasina. Fantastic work. You can see the fear in Oswald's eyes as he realizes he'd been set up for the murder of JFK. And you can see the duper's delight in LBJ's eyes and grin as he's being sworn in on the plane. What a conspiracy. LBJ made a lot of changes. The people backing LBJ would have wanted these changes. Who were these people? Well, I go into that, and I'm going to be going into it more on this thread because it's an opportunity to do precisely that. Ep, for an initial comment, I was very pleased. I thought that was excellent. Iborio Gusso. This is the second comment. The fact is that, like other investigators, it is of no use. The truth will always be the most convenient for certain interests, and millions of people are educated to believe in these truths like a religion, and that they can never get out of it. This example can help you think about how many truths there are that really are not, and also think about how easy it is to mass-produce average idiots on the streets. Well, I suppose there's something to be said. I mean, look at the government massively playing the American people. You know, badgering everyone who can actually add 2 plus 2 and get 4. I mean, how insulting is that? Unreal. So, you know, most Americans aren't in a position to conduct independent research. The Warren Commission sought to seal up all the records, all the testimony, and so forth for 75 years. That was because the average lifespan of an American is 75 years. So by doing that, they would ensure that anyone who was alive at the time of the assassination would be dead to comment on the extent which the American people had been played. Here's the third comment. Rocky Road. LBJ was a devious bastard his whole life, and if he would conspire with Israel and probably the CIA in the attack on the USS Liberty, knowing how many American sailors would be killed, killing one man was nothing. I agree with that. Well, we have some 34 sailors on the Liberty were killed by Israeli jets strafing and torpedoing the ship, which miraculously did not sink, 134 others who were wounded. This was supposed to be an event that would be blamed on Egypt. This was during the Six-Day War. To justify America entering, I think Lyndon planned to bomb Cairo. But Moshe Dayan was such a brilliant general, he didn't need any help. He cleaned it all up. He took care of business. Lyndon even directed the callback of planes that were being sent from the American fleet to come to the protection of the Liberty and called them back. He wanted that ship at the bottom of the sea. Miraculous, it didn't happen. So Rocky Road gets a gold star for me. Here's Cabby Stander, number 4. The crucial question is not so much who and how, but why. Now, it's interesting that they're not watching. Here I gave you, my JFK special of 18 November 2021. I go into all of that. Who, how, why, all of that. So it would be good if some of these folks were to actually watch. Thus, we have counterattacks saying, who were these people? Thus, I posted. This is then the sixth post. The politics are as fascinating as a science. As I explained in JFK's special, 18 November 2021, the best way to sort it out is to separate the sponsors from the facilitators and the mechanics. Sponsors, CIA, Joint Chiefs, anti-Castro Cuban, Mafia, Fed, Texas Oilmen Israel, facilitators, Lyndon of the assassination, J. Edgar Hoover of the cover-up, mechanics, the shooters, supervisors, and coordinators, including George Herbert, Walker Bush, and Edward Lansdale, whom many of us believe positioned the shooters and determined the sequence of shots. He was an Air Force general responsible for assassinations around the world. He resigned his commission before, so if he were actually exposed, he would not be then serving as an officer in the U.S. Air Force. There were eight sponsors, each of which put up their own shooter. Thus, the back shot was fired from the top of the county records building by a Dallas deputy sheriff. He was acting at the behest of the Texas oil men. The shot to the throat by an Air Force expert at the behest of the Joint Chiefs. The shot to the back of the head by an anti-Castro Cuban, obviously for the anti-Castro Cuban. The shot to the temple by a mafia hitman who may have been the best shot in the world at the time. I talk about these individuals and identify them by name there. And the shot to the right side of the head by the Israeli assassin. I spell it out in greater detail in that video and many others I've published over the years. Check it out. Thanks. Then we have anonymous. Was Kennedy really killed by some 6.5 millimeter bullets fired by Italian-made Carcano rifles? If so, that would be a real fly in the ointment, because that was a $13 surplus rifle that no serious shooter or high-level assassin would pick for such a risky, once-in-a-lifetime job. A hillbilly hunting deer would have a better quality rifle. Also, Oswald is a choice of words for someone in such a stressful situation. It would be expected to just say they were innocent, etc. Perhaps he was set up to take the fall. The most important suspect in the entire world at that moment ends up dead. Right within the police station, had that happened in another country, no American would believe the official story. I responded and see if that doesn't answer most of your questions. Everything Lee told Will Fritz has turned out to be right, that he was the patsy, that the backyard photographs were of someone else's body with his face pasted on, that he was outside with co-workers watching the shooting when the shooting took place. Parallel with Sirhan in relation to the death of his brother, RFK. Add any further questions. So, Dr. Rock writes, this is the eighth. Exactly. And that really starts with how and then to who and then to why, of course. The problem now is we'll never get to the who, and thus we'll always be forced to speculate on the why. However, the baseline reality is that elements within our government either assassinated, helped assassinate, or allowed the assassination of a U.S. president and allowed it to go unresolved and unpunished. Thus, at minimum, every agency that was complicit in the crime and the cover-up must be completely eliminated, not just because if they did it once, they could do it again, but because they obviously cannot be trusted at all. Ergo, the FBI and CIA must be eliminated completely and something else built in their stead, or maybe not. have the U.S. Marshals take over all the needed FBI roles and use military intelligence in place of the CIA. Well, I added to Dr. Rock, actually, we know about 90% of what there is to know, including the who, the how, and the why, citing here the cover of my fourth book on JFK, Who, How, and Why. Just watch my JFK special of 18 November 2021 and let me know what else you want to know. Because I've been doing, you know, all this research with these experts and putting it together. Now, here's Apocalypse in Wonderland. This one bothers me for multiple reasons. No need to buy this book. There's an excellent free online source which provides an in-depth forensic analysis, especially how the autopsy was falsified, altered history exposing deceit and deception in the JFK assassination medical evidence part one. Explore Freedom is a source, fff.org. A particular interest is the throat, which did not come from a gunshot, but a flechette weapon devised by the technical services of the CIA. See also Fletcher Prouty. And he gives a site to Ratical, RATICAL.org, Ratville/JFK/TUM.html. Ratical is also a valuable JFK source. For those who are more interested in the why than the how, I've not found a better book than The Unspeakable by James Douglas. And James Douglas is a good guy, and he's got it. Here we have, and I say bad, without even reading the book, Apocalypse in Wonderland would take us down the rabbit hole with distraction and disinformation. This book focuses on the medical evidence. I and others, such as Phil Nelson and Roger Stone, focus on the politics. And is Apocalypse telling us that anyone who has views about Israel that differ from his cannot speak the truth about JFK? As it happens, I am an avid anti-Zionist and even Holocaust denier. So if Jerry and David and I were to agree on the politics of the assassination, would that mean that Jerry could not be right? What kind of nonsense is that? Egad. The guy has not even watched my JFK special, which integrates the politics with the science. That troubles me a lot. Actually, we have another here. John Smith 001. Does anyone think that's a real name? Of course, he is a rabid Zionist. I am sure this book is nothing more than attempt to muddy the water, makes no connection between Rubenstein, the Jewish mafia, the Jewish Dallas money power, LBJ, Ben-Gurion, James Jesus Angleton, and Mossad. I'll bet $100. There's little to no mention of any of these things in his book. I'll bet there's no mention of JFK and Ben-Gurion's feud over Israel's nuclear program. Mossad killed JFK because he was trying to put a stop to their nuclear weapon program. They're probably led by Ben-Gurion himself, resigned rather than receive a letter from Kennedy demanding an end to it. Lesser known is that Kennedy was also planning to demand a two-state solution with a right of return for Palestinians personally. I think the latter was a bigger threat, but either was enough motive for them to kill him. Of course, he has claimed on air on Alex Jones' show to be in contact with the Mossad, top intelligence in Israel, in my opinion. Of course, he is nothing but a disinformation agent, but like Jones, meant to steer people away from the conclusion that Jewish power does not want people to make, and every aspect of the JFK assassination having direct ties back to the Jewish mafia in Israel. Lansky and the Jewish mob were also instrumental in the founding of Israel and arming them for the Nakba. In other words, Lansky and the Jewish mafia were joined at the hip with Jewish terrorists that eventually became Assad and Ben-Gurion from before the founding of Israel. And I say that's very peculiar because I'm an avid anti-Zionist. This is very interesting stuff. Apocalypse in Wonderland. I'm gonna reply to this other guy. And I wish that these readers would actually follow all the leads here, read the book and so forth, check it out. Somehow, I guess we lost the break. I wait for the break and it did not come to pass. So I'm certainly going to open the line for callers. Stand by. 608-957-8727. 608-957-8727. Very interesting. Very interesting. Go ahead, 408. Join the conversation. Give us your thoughts.
Boy, I really wish you could get over this JFK thing. I'd say it's
very good, Paul. Very good.
Oh, man. You know, I was having this thought. I was thinking this would be interesting, right? Even for myself, but for you. If you could go back in time, but you would have an altered physical appearance. So the 1963, 1964 Jim Fetzer wouldn't know he's talking to the 2024 Jim Fetzer. And you would be tasked with describing the world in 2024 to, what were you at that time, 22, 23 years old, something like that?
Yeah, I would turn the year, you know, the age of the year. I'm born in 40, so I would have been 23 at the time. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just was, I mean, you know, like 20, I said, I figured you were about that because I was going to be eight years old in 10 days when John F. Kennedy was, shot. So, yeah, just had that thought, you know, like, would you ever have believed this person from the future that was going to describe, I mean, many events, like, you know. By the way, we have the space program, but we're going to fake going to the moon and on and on and on.
Yes. Hang on. We got Brian here too. Brian, go ahead. Join you and Paul. Go ahead. Give me your thoughts. Have I got it right, Eric? 406. Is that not Brian?
No, it's Keith.
Keith. Okay, Keith. Yeah, go for it, Keith. Please, please, please.
Yeah, yeah. I sent you a video link to Kennedy's audio biographer in your email if you want to play that for, you know, it's just a short video.
Tell me about it.
Well, it's him who explains, the autobiographer explains how because of Ben-Gurion and stuff like that the Mossad took out Kennedy. It's self-explanatory in the video.
But, Keith, you understand, they were only part of it. You had all these other parties. We had the anti-Castro Cubans had a shooter. The Texas oilmen had a shooter. The Fed had a shooter. The anti-Castro Cubans had a shooter. Lyndon Johnson had a shooter. The Joint Chiefs had a shooter. I don't like this oversimplification of saying it was all Israel. It's not true. It was more complicated.
No, I believe one thing, though, Jim, is that the Cuba thing plays a dramatic role in it. I've got other CIA commenting about the assassination, but it was what was going on at the time in Cuba, because this was the playground of the Playboys. And when the Cuban Revolution came around, was it in 53, I guess it was, or no, 58, I think it was. Anyway, they lost a lot down there, and there's an old New York Times article of 1860 that I could send you, but it talks about exactly the grand mecca of Cuba, of what they did after the U.S. kicked Spain out of Cuba there. The immense wealth and stuff that the rich oligarchs were enjoying from Cuba. But anyway, like I say, I was just listening here, but I just thought if you wanted to play that short clip there, but this is Kennedy's audiographer there, so it's his comment about the way he was told.
Let me find it, Keith. Let me find it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of Kennedy biographies. Here you go. Okay. All right. Let's see what we got here.
There's a very surprising series of letters between Kennedy and David Ben-Gurion, not only the premier of Israel, but the founder of Israel, in which they're very angry letters, in which Kennedy is saying to Ben-Gurion, I'm killing myself trying to get a nuclear test ban treaty. I've even got De Gaulle on board, and that's impossible. And you keep testing in Dimona. You've got to stop. And Ben-Gurion, thank you, in so many words says, it's easy for you to say sitting in Hyannisport. I'm sitting with the Arabs all around me, and you want me to give up nuclear testing. And Kennedy threatens him. And he threatens him in such a way that Ben-Gurion resigned. And I will tell you that I found articles, not in any crackpot publications, but in very sophisticated publications saying, forget Lyndon Johnson, forget the CIA, forget Fidel Castro. The Mossad killed Kennedy because they were so upset over what he did to Ben-Gurion.
And I say, Keith, the Mossad threw in on the assassination. Ben-Gurion had them participate, but it was not their deal. It began in 1960. It began in Los Angeles. This is before Jack had any email correspondence with Ben-Gurion. It began in 1960 when JFK beat LBJ for the presidential nomination of the Democrat Party. He invited Stuart Symington to be his running mate. Senator from Missouri gave him overnight to think about it. Meanwhile, Bobby went to the Johnson suite to extend a pro forma, purely symbolic invitation to run with JFK. Never imagining he'd have the least interest. Lyndon jumped on it. And he said that if he were not on the ticket, he'd expose it. Among JFK's dalliances was one with a beautiful woman who was a spy for East Germany, information he'd obtained from J. Edgar Hoover, and that he had Addison's disease and wasn't expected to live a long, healthy life. And if he were not on the ticket, then any legislative proposal set down from the White House would be dead on arrival because he would bottle him up as a powerful majority leader of the Senate, and they had to acquiesce. Now, when it was announced that Lyndon was going to be running with Jack, one of his wealthy supporters was furious, broke into the Johnson suite cursing and swearing. Bobby Baker took him into a bedroom and explained to him what they had in mind. He came out all smiles, saying he thought that was an excellent plan. Bobby Baker would later in public declare JFK would not live out his first term and that he would die a violent death.
Okay,
And in the course of events, Lyndon sent his chief administrative assistant, Cliff Carter, down to Dallas to make all the arrangements, to make sure all the arrangements for the assassination were in place.
Okay,
that's when it began.
It's like you repeat, you got these little vignettes that you say over and over and over again. And I don't know if you even question some of the things that you say. Like you just said, he broke in, he's all mad, right? Kicking and screaming. They said, no, hold on here. Don't worry about it. He's not going to live up to it. Why is he going to be all upset? Right? Why is he all upset?
Because LBJ was going to help JFK become president.
Oh, for God's sake.
You don't get that?
Not really, no. There's a lot of things that don't make sense to me. They really don't. I mean, in my
opinion, Paul, what makes sense to one person may make perfect sense to another. It's got a lot to do with your background and your analytic ability and all that. So what, you don't think LBJ was a mastermind behind the assassination?
Not necessarily, no. I think he was, look, it's all speculation at this point, but I'll tell you what I do think.
This is nothing I'm telling you is speculation. I had over 100 conversations with Madeline Duncan Brown.
Okay,
she was
Wait a minute. Just don't take off. Now, I don't get to take off on a word that you say on very rarely, so please don't take off on a word that I say, such as speculation. In terms of knowing exactly, okay, who, what, where, when, why, and how, okay, a lot of it is speculation. Some of it is provable, the physical evidence, as you say, right? I had another, I don't want to get down the sidetrack here, but for example, the alteration of x-rays. That's an interesting topic to me. I'll have to get into later because I know it's a photograph and an x-ray, completely different things, and I don't really know. I would like to know how it is they would alter these x-rays and exactly what the purpose was for that. But I'm just going to say this for the moment. I don't believe the Damona thing has any significance at all. I think it's a red herring. I think if, again, and you know we've had this conversation before after Jay Widener, and we didn't get into it that much, but if Kennedy was killed for any number of reasons, the number one reason, which we rarely hear about, is the money, okay, the Federal Reserve, all right? I really do believe that is the main thing, if not maybe the preeminent reason that they're not going to allow, okay? It's similar, you know, you go all the way back in time to, you know, Germany and World War II, and that was probably the biggest reason. I mean, it started out with the English. Of course, they were always run by these people, right, Jews and the Jewish East India Company. And it was well known even in World War One, they wanted to eliminate Germany as an economic competitor. But then once that was, you know, on the table, then, of course, when they started to have their own money, that just cannot be allowed, you know, in this system that we live in, because that is their means of ruling us. It's not a sense of guilt, okay, rooted in the Holocaust. That's not it at all. It's always been about money and the control of money. And with all this money, they can basically buy people. They can buy the government, just like in the movie Idiocracy, where Brando bought the government. So, again, you know what I feel about nuclear weapons. I don't think they're real, okay? They could have come along after the fact, but it's sort of like when you look into the evidence of that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were firebombed, that they weren't nuked, okay? That's clear when you actually study the photographs and you understand the analysis that other people have subjected these photographs to. And then you also look at the very specious trail of scientific proof, so-called proof, that nuclear fission based upon, you know, what's known as a low-energy collision, in other words, neutron absorption, is very, very questionable. You have to ask yourself, okay, well, if they didn't really nuke Hiroshima and Nagasaki, then, you know, obviously they had to fake it, similar to that they didn't go to the moon, they had to fake it, okay? And they're not above faking things, as you know. So again, this is just where I come out. So the Damona thing to me, I've never really bought, and I don't buy it now. I don't believe there's any Samson option. I believe it's all bullshit.
Yeah. Could I interject something?
Go ahead.
If you listen to Robert McNamara, it took 350 sorties to burn Tokyo to the ground. So figure that in when you think of one single bomb that would do the same damage in Hiroshima or Nagasaki. Anyway, I do have to roll here, but I did want to say one other thing. Jim, I've got some other footage and stuff where they're talking about the OSS/CIA. Right after the war, they had buried a bunch of Soviet weapons on the island of Barbados, which was to be used in this Bay of Pigs. And a lot of this centers, I believe, this is just my opinion here, that a lot of it centered around what they had planned for Cuba. Remember, the revolution is what you have to think of the timing and stuff of what was going on there. But IT&T was pissed off because when Castro had seized the IT&T there, I think it was $1 billion revenue. And it's the same thing if you look back at Chile. It's the same thing with IT&T. A lot of big money in with the telcos and stuff, just like what's his name? I got his name. Anyway, he's a Jewish billionaire that he and Mitt Romney, they have been buying up all these distressed telcos and stuff throughout South America and stuff and the islands. But it's like Amdocs, you know, from 9/11. They want total control of all the communications and stuff. And just like with the internet, TikTok, all this stuff, they want total control of everything like that. So anyway, but the island of Barbados came in there because they wanted to make sure it was Soviet weapons. That way, if anything was discovered. And in that one video, you can see Castro as they present these arms, saying that this was all done by America and stuff. But I think that Cuba is related so much to this JFK thing and the fact that he was Catholic, because at the same time they were getting ready to push this feminist movement, which is abortions and stuff. And, yeah. And Kennedy came from a family of, what, 11? And what do we see the FBI doing right now, going into Catholic homes and wanting to put informants in the churches and stuff? And the FBI is trained by the ADL. And
right. So that's a very interesting thing, too. Yeah. I mean, if we look at it all in terms of this, with this word that I became familiar with back in the 80s when I was listening to this guy on FM radio show, milieu. So if you view it from the fact that it's just part of this Jewish milieu, okay, of their power, the basically, shall we say, continuation of and the strengthening of and, you know, the pervasiveness of their influence on most every aspect of our society. And of course, along with that goes their history of fraud and deception. Right. So, you know, yeah, I like a lot that you're saying. I'm not sure exactly what you meant by, you know, the 350 sorties with Tokyo versus, you know,
yeah,
so forth.
I mean, what they call the B-25 or the B-50. I'm not into aeronautics and
no.
like that. And yeah. But anyway, when LeMay and McNamara was discussing afterwards that they would be counted as war criminals for what they had done because they had burned 69 cities in Japan. The fact is McNamara kept commenting on Tokyo, you know, 100,000 dead. But that wasn't it, because McNamara then says, out of the 69 cities, he says it would have been as if 27 million Americans died. And if you watch that video, Fog of War, it gives you a screen by screen as he's talking of like the bombings in one town would equal 35% of Los Angeles, 75% of Chicago. It goes on like that. But and if you go back to demographics again there, the before population of World War II in Japan, well, you know, in Japan itself, and then afterwards, the numbers do crunch that is about 27 million Japanese died. And I think there's some other stuff on the outline, you know, for all the Iwo Jima and stuff like that, because those island battles were bloody and stuff. But EMJ, E. Michael Jones, comments on Oppenheimer 2 on his video on BitChute, that the Jews were the ones that were behind the Manhattan Project. And one of the main centers hit over there, and I can't remember whether it was the Hiroshima or the Nagasaki, but it was a Catholic, like, enclave.
Right. So, okay, yeah. I mean, I've heard this angle before. And, you know, my friend who's very, very Catholic and very, very anti-Jew has informed me going back to the 90s about, oh, okay, you know, that it was a very Christian, a very Catholic city. And I just dismissed this off the, I mean, if they burned 69, let me finish, please. If they burned 69 cities to the ground, okay, you can't convince me that a motive for any single one of them was that particular city, right? I forget which one he said it was, Hiroshima, I believe, had a very large Christian or Catholic population. To me, that just sounds like a bunch of nonsense. So it's the most
horrific. Just one area.
If you look
at the demographics of Taiwan and stuff, you'll see that there's a plethora of religions and stuff. I think it's like 30 some odd different religions in Taiwan. But I just want to say this one more thing. CIA John Stockwell had noted that, like when they were talking about the Red Dawn and stuff, where the Cubans, the Soviets, and the and Nicaraguans were to parachute into Colorado and to have a bunch of footballers kick their ass and stuff like that. But he noted that, you know, you have to realize they weren't killing Soviets throughout Central America. They were killing Catholics. Because if any of these videos, any of the, and I'm not Catholic, but anyway, any of these videos you watch, like Dangerous Roads, well, if you watch any of these videos like Dangerous Roads, Peru and stuff, these are very high, 88%, as a matter of fact, in Venezuela. You have to look at the demographics, okay, and the CIA is...
So listen, so there's a key word that you just used, demographics. So let's stay on that, because as I made this point on this show many times, and I made it other places, okay, these people, okay, the you-know-whos, they don't like anybody else, okay? So really, in my mind, it doesn't really matter. If you want to make the case to me that on a religious or a philosophical basis, they hate Christians the most, then fine, I'll believe you. But you fill a room with a bunch of people, right? And I don't care, you know, so you put white people and brown people and black people and Arab people, whatever. You put 100 or 200 people in a room, tell me which ones are Catholic or which ones are Christian. You know, you can't,
well,
because it's a concept. The point I'm making is this, is historically, racially, right, these people were known, okay? Christians, to me, means white people. Okay. Now you can say there's Japanese Christians or there's Chinese Christians. Okay, fine. But again, most of the time, a Japanese or a Chinese person is not going to be Christian. So therefore, you can't really tell. You can tell what a race somebody is by looking at them, but you can't tell what religion. So if you want to say a country is 80% Christian or Catholic, and somehow they're making war upon that country for that reason, okay, fine. Then we're talking about numbers and probability there. But what I'm telling you, this is what I believe, yeah, okay, is they don't give a damn what religion you are, because this is a racial conflict. This is not a religion conflict.
Well, I realize it's a category of the mind. The thing with the religion, though, is years ago when people used to ask you, like, hey, Jim, Mr. Fetzer, what are you? And he'd say, well, I'm agnostic. Another guy would say I'm Catholic. Another guy would say I'm Protestant. Another guy would say, hey, I'm Jehovah's Witness or Mormon. There was never race tagged to it.
Well, I know,
today,
but that doesn't mean it's not there. That's a reality. And so that's what these people see, okay? In other words, it's white people, okay? So all this, whether you're Christian or Protestant or Lutheran or Methodist, America was white people, okay? And it wasn't that long ago. It's within our living memories, all of us here on this phone. It's within all our living memories that America was 90% plus white, okay? That's all they're after. That's why they're flooding us with all these non-whites, okay? It doesn't really matter what religion they are. But just quickly, because I didn't get to finish, you know, what my thought about this. You mentioned something about 350 sorties in Tokyo as opposed to what I mentioned before about Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, you know, since we weren't there, we don't know exactly what took place. But again, what we're left to go on is looking at the photographs after, and the damage is incongruous with what their claim is. In other words, if they claim that there's a single bomb that has a certain amount of explosive power that can reach certain temperatures and so on and so forth, then based upon those calculations, the damage would look a certain way as opposed to looking like it was firebombed with asymmetrical damage. Because when you get firebombing...
Okay, what about the
Tsar
bomb over there in Russia?
What's that?
What about the Tsar bomb over there in Russia? 50 megatons. You saw the damage it did.
No, I never saw the damage it did. Again,
well,
this is something...
There's videos online.
I don't believe it. Just because they have a video, there's all kinds of videos that are online. It's a video, right? So just, again, this is something... You have to walk down this road with an open mind. I'm not saying at this point, okay, it's one of these things where it's a very, very, very firm belief. There's certain things that I believe I know beyond any doubt. Okay, I'm not going to apply that to nuclear weapons. But if you've read, and I know you haven't, okay, if you've read Akio Nakatani's work, right, Death Object, Exploding the Nuclear Weapons Hoax, which I sent to Jim, which he has not read yet, and he probably won't ever read till the day he dies, which is fine. That's his choice. But if people were to look at that and then go to the site, biglies.org, big-lies.org, or also
I'll tell you what,
okay,
though, we're running out of time here, but
Okay, well, there's a lot of information there. So
the way things are going right now, we're about ready to see whether or not there's nukes or not because of what's going on over in Ukraine with the French sending over 2,000.
There's not. I've been right on every single prediction I've ever made on Jim Fetzer's show. We'll see. I basically said 100%.
Love it, Paul.
We'll see.
Hey, you guys. Excellent, excellent. I'm so glad you both called in. That's wonderful. I want to have you back to discuss this further. I'm having Jerry Corsi back next Wednesday, okay? We couldn't do it today. We'll do it next Wednesday. I want you both to call in. We'll talk about it more. Meanwhile, everyone, spend as much time with your family, your friends, and people you love and care about. We do not know how much time we have left. Thanks.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.